Hey, that's Coach Mike here. That's CoachMike.com. Premium guys, love you to death. Crossover, thank you so much for all your support of our site. Without you, I don't know where we'd be. Crossover, wonderful stuff, man. If you're not using it, try it out. I use it. I love it. This is our fourth podcast with Coach Berkman. You've heard me say time and time again, you know, without Coach Berkman, there may not be LexCoachMike.com. Just a brilliant, brilliant coach. Just check this out real quick. His career record in coaching is 466-55. He was inducted into the National Lacrosse Hall of Fame in 2013. 27 straight NCAA tournament appearances. 14 times in the Division III National Championship game. CAC Conference Coach of the Year 9 times. Babe Kraus, D3 National Coach of the Year 3 times. 10 NCAA championships. 10 NCAA championships. I mean, just unbelievable. I think you're going to love the podcast. A lot of great stuff. We go through the practice plan. We feature in the article section a unique look at 5v5s. Rides and clears at the time of the podcast. They're clearing at 89%, riding at 76%. Try that out. Man up, 54% conversions, and a new way, kind of a cool way, to start your 3v2s. Again, I am so blessed and humbled by your support of my site. Without further ado, one of my good friends and a coach I look up to above all others, Coach Jim Berkman, Salisbury.
Hey, that's Coach Mike here. That's CoachMike.com. Love you guys to death. Today is another special, special day. If you've listened to the other podcasts, you know I'm so blessed, man. You know, I've probably spent 130 hours on the air and another 100 hours off the air with all the top coaches in the country. Nobody has influenced me more. Nobody do I respect more. I hate to say I have a favorite because of the business I'm in with these podcasts, but unquestionably, the coach that I look up to the most and use 80% of everything I see from him, and I would use the other 20% of my time, Jim Berkman, head coach of the Salisbury Seagulls. Coach, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
This is actually our fourth go-round with you, man, over 6 or 7 years. I can't believe. I want the listeners to know real quick, you know, I had this idea, you know, from my speaking business that I wanted to start emulating IMLCA and some of the U.S. lacrosse stuff on the internet, you know, with these podcasts. And like always, you know, if I need advice, I went to Coach Berkman. And I don't know if you remember this conversation or not, Coach. I said, hey, man, I want to do this thing with – I think it's when I was down doing the workshop with the staff at Salisbury on the leadership stuff. But anyway – so I got this idea, man. I want to emulate IMLCA on the internet. I want to do this and this and this. Coach Berkman looked at me, tilted his head as only he can, and he said, "Highlighter, that's what he calls me. We would tell you why if we knew you better." But he says, "Highlighter, you don't have a chance in hell of pulling this off." And I said, "What do you mean, man? I did a business plan. I got 4,000 programs, United States and Canada. They can't all go, you know, to these conferences. The information coaches are so willing to share. I mean, it's just a natural. There's a big need for it, and we want to do it, you know, 99.99% all for free, and the coaches will get in on it too, and share their information the way you do and others do." And you looked at me, and I don't know if you remember what you said, man. You said 4,000 coaches, but only 500 have the passion that you have. That's what you told me. And I'll never forget that day. And for like the next 14 months, your prophecy came true. We started LexCoachMike.com. You know, we had like 35 free members for a year. You know, I was like a minister in an auditorium that seats like 65,000 with like four people, all relatives in the front row, you know. And now here we are, obviously, with 5,000 members and 700,000 page views and a big following with the NCAA coaches as well as the high school and the rec coaches. And you were the first coach that ever came on, and I owe you so much. So before we get started, I just wanted all the listeners to hear that and to say it to you again, man.
Well, as you know, I'm a guy that likes to believe in spreading the game. You know, I think when we had that chat, I don't know how many, 7 or 8 years ago, we knew the game was growing, but I think the magnitude of what you've done in the last 7 years, I don't think anybody could have guessed it, you know, at that time. And, you know, there's a bigger audience.
Well, and it's crazy, man. I mean, you know, we have people from, I think, 8 or 9 different countries. You know, I was asking, I don't want to spend time on this, but I was asking the guys that do our metrics. I mean, I keep getting these hits from Japan and Australia, you know, and they told me those are military guys that are playing club lacrosse on their bases and starting to help youth, you know. And then all these programs that have gone down to, like, Central America, you know, and started programs. I know Bates does that, and some other guys do that. Yeah, just, no, but and at the end of the day, Jim, it's just, I don't know what to say. It's just unbelievably humbling. You know, I go to these conferences, people want to take selfies with me. I'm going, you got to be kidding me, you know. Yeah, it's nuts. And due in large part to you, because I would have never gone to my first IMLCA if it weren't at your insistence. And so with all that being said, thank you so much. Hey, Coach, I want to I got a couple things I want to talk about. You and I talked the other day. I want to get into that 5v5 look a little bit. Going through the skeleton of the practice plan, you know, every year we continue to see these shifts, not of 100% of the coaches, but a lot of the coaches. And I know the last time you were starting to do your man up, man down, or had been doing your man up, man down for a period of time. You know, in the middle of practice, we're seeing guys integrate that now in maybe 5 times a day or 3 times a day. You'll be running a 4v3, okay, say a minute, and then a 30-second penalty, and bang and go, ones against twos, twos against ones, whatever it turns out to be. But I know that you were still, and one of the things that I've emulated from you, and people think I'm crazy, man, people want to watch our practices, and they come up, and they see us shooting for 30 minutes, oftentimes, with poles and goalies in the shooting drills, and they're going, why would you have those guys in the shooting drills? And they're going, hey, I don't think you understand. You know, it's all about touches. And it's a heck of a lot more fun than doing line drills, metaphorically. You know, I don't know how many guys do line drills anymore. But anyway, you were doing the shooting drills, a little bit of stretching, and then going small side, transition and scripted into some three-quarter field, maybe the man up, man down, transition drills, 6v6, and then kind of working on rides and clears maybe towards the end of practice. Have you played games with the sequence or the order of your practice at all, Coach, since we talked to you last in 2013 or something?
I don't think we've changed a lot. I think, you know, when we still shoot a lot at the beginning. We usually stretch after. We come out of the stretch. We're usually doing some small-sided, what we would call, you know, our tight space, you know, 3-on-2, 4-on-3, 5-on-4 work. When we're doing that work, it usually changes from day to day, whether it's starting out of a ground ball, whether it's the traditional in a tight space, or whether we're starting it with some scripted stuff, you know, with pass down, pick down, and you got to initiate a pick and work on your picks and slips out of the 3-on-2s, 4-on-3s. But after that, what we've been doing a lot this year is that we've been playing a lot of 5-on-5 after the small-sided stuff. Instead of, you know, playing 1-on-1 and doing 2-on-2s, you know, there's only so many things you can do, and, you know, and I guess it's by virtue of what we thought we really needed going into the season. You know, we graduated 3 All-Americans on defense with 2 aspiring sophomores that are really good defenders and very athletic, but weren't very good at the team defense part of the equation. So we thought we had to do something that, you know, instead of them just guarding people wasn't the issue, it was the bigger picture. And we needed to put the crease component in it that you usually don't get with a 4-on-4 component. And so we started playing 5-on-5 and, you know, getting the ball around once, getting people in and out, and then, you know, and playing. And you can see that it's really helped our slides. It's really helped our shows and some of those individual skill sets that make a great team component. So usually after the small-sided stuff, we get into the 5-on-5, and it could be scripted a little bit depending on the day and the opponent, but we've been playing a 10 to 14 minute block of a 5-on-5 consistently, you know, every day since, I would say, the first day of practice.
Coach, is that getting the pace of practice initiated? I know if you've never seen a Coach Berkman practice, the best metaphor I can give you is like a Willy Wonka chocolate factory. There's just people moving everywhere on every inch of the field. You know, I can remember you telling me if you were running man up, man down, twos and ones, ones and twos at both ends of the field, the guys in the middle of the field were shooting. that weren't necessarily involved. I mean, there's nobody standing around. Do the guys come out and go 5v5 quick pace, or does it have a tendency to drag sometimes?
No, because it can be done two different ways. I mean, you know, we can go from our small-sided stuff, which we have two cages going, to right onto the same two cages, you know, and it could be a progression from, hey, we're going to do 8 minutes of 4-on-4, and then we're going to do 12 minutes of 5-on-5, and we stay right on those cages, and everybody's, you know, maybe there's one group out and one group rolling, and, you know, the next group's in. But I think this year, just because of the nature of the beast, sometimes you got to watch a little bit sometimes to get better, too. So sometimes we're just doing 5-on-5, and the whole team's doing it. You know, you go in, you do one turnover, boom. The next group is in, and you're rolling, and you're watching, and everybody's focusing on what the off-ball guys are doing, what they would be doing in those scenarios. And, you know, we're learning how to be better team defensive players. And I think it's made a dramatic impact because, you know, we've done some really nice things here defensively against some, you know, extremely talented top 10 opponents that I didn't think was going to occur, and I think a lot of it has to do with this 5-on-5 drill because I think that especially the two sophomores down low and the new junior that starts have become a lot better at the team part of the equation.
And, Coach, we talked off the air last week setting up the podcast and stuff. You said you were running that with three poles and two middies.
No, you were usually doing three middies.
I'm sorry. I'm glad I said that.
Two attackmen. We do want two short stick defenders in there. We don't want four poles most of the time. Just so that, you know, it's that the short sticks are becoming better players because besides the close defenders, you know, for us, you know, and again, it's a year thing because we're looking at this year's team. You know, you had the new people at close that needed a lot of work on becoming better defensive players. And then our other weakness we thought, you know, on the defensive part of the equation was the ability of our short stick offensive players to play defense. So we didn't want to have, you know, four poles in there taking out one of those spots when some of those middies, old middies need to be in there playing some defense and getting better at that part of the equation.
Yeah, that was kind of my follow-up, Coach. I mean, knowing you the way I do, Coach loves to break everybody up. Right? I mean, you will find his poles playing offense in his 3v2s and his 4v3s on a regular basis, getting the stick work and the touches in for all the people. So, again, we're not focusing on D-middies here. We're focusing on middies. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, because, you know, for us this year, you know, we have 2 4-year starters at D-middy, and one's a 2-time first-team All-American, and the other one is just as good as he is. You know, those guys don't need a lot of work when it comes to the individual and the team part of the equation. You know, they actually need a little bit more work on their offensive skills so that they can be, you know, we can generate some offense north-south out of the D-middy position. But the offensive middies, and especially, you know, last year in our quarterfinal loss to Lynchburg, you know, in a great game, 13-11, and you dissect the game, and you look back and you say, holy cow, they gave up 3 goals when their offensive middies were caught on the field and they looked like fish out of water. All right, and that stuck in our hearts all off season, that was never going to happen again. That, you know, if those guys got caught on the field, they'd be more than adequate. And I think, you know, that's one of the objectives of this 5-on-5 drill, you know, that you don't get playing 1-on-1 and 2-on-2. It's not necessarily on-ball defense. It's the mistakes that the O-middies make with the defensive packages, you know, that makes you vulnerable.
Well, and I think coaches are, I know I am. You know, one of the things that I've heard over and over the last 18 months from the coaches we interview that I haven't heard over the previous period of time is, well, two things, I guess. Number one, a focus on D-middies playing offense, you know. And secondly, and vice versa, O-middies getting caught on the defensive end, on the non-box side or however it turns out to go down. And the second thing is the communication between the middies and the poles, you know, on defense. And, you know, I think guys got caught up in the skeleton work and the position work and the small group work and maybe not as much, you know, communicating traditionally in a 6v6 trying to work on team defenses and slide packages and shows and all that. But at the end of the day, I get a lot of emails, Jim, from guys saying, you know, how do I put some zip, you know, and some excitement back into my 6v6? Because I think most of the guys that are proponents of our site and come in here have bought into the fact that the days of running, you know, a high school coach, you know, doing skill work and running for an hour, 15 minutes of transition and 40 minutes of 6v6 if they don't have complete rosters to go 10v10 effectively, skill set wise, you know, how to add some zip to it and put some excitement back into their 6v6. And we write a lot of articles trying to, you know, figure out ways to do that. But,
well,
yeah,
you know,
I love the 5v5 idea as an alternative concept.
Yeah, well, I also like the 5-on-5 for offense, too. You know, it teaches us to dodge, and then it teaches us to spin the ball through X. It teaches us to shorten the passes up, you know. And as you're doing that, you know, and people are sliding, they're learning where slides are coming from and where looks are. And, you know, I think it's been very good for us on offense, too, as far as our spacing goes, realizing matchups and clearing through and then making sure that we had, you know, outlets at X and outlets back up top, right and left of the Dodger. That has made us a better offensive team, I think, also.
Coach, do you clear out of there if the defense gets the ball or on a save?
Yeah, they'll clear the ball through the top of the box. So especially if he's shot, guy makes a save, you know, first look as to where the shot came from. If not, boom, we're trying to get the ball to the shorty that's scraping underneath and get him to run the ball through the box so that they got to make a couple quick decisions. We don't just stop because they turned the ball over. If the ball goes to the defense, any ground ball in every drill, all right, you know, we always are yelling finish. You know, we're always saying finish, finish. Because we never want to give up that ground ball in the crease area, 2 seconds left in the quarter, and you give up a goal that is a backbreaker. So we never finish a drill just because the offense turns it over. The drill's not finished until the ball is off the ground.
And how long you run the reps, Coach?
Well, we've been pretty much doing one turnover, or one possession. So the middies are in, boom, 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 shot saved, they come out, boom, the next five guys are in, boom. You know, they spin the ball, they throw a ball on the inside, you know, it's dropped, D picks it up, clears it to the box, next guy's in. So guys are running in and out, you know, and that's part of this guy's conditioning thing. You can't walk until you get to your line, so that, you know, you're in and out. And I don't like to do things where and that's why I don't like playing a lot of 6-on-6, because I think a lot of coaches do this, is that they have no consequences for their turnovers. You know, hey, we're playing 6-on-6, guy throws the ball to X, throws it over his head, oh, that's okay, let's just start over again. Well, that's not okay, you know. So if, you know, the first midfield's in and they're going, and they spin it through, guy dodges, throws the ball over the guy's head at X, boom, the D picks it up, clears it to the box, and that O-line's out. And the next group is in. You know, so that they got to think about, you know, that turnover, and, you know, not that it's a big punishment or anything, but it's still, hey, you don't get rewarded for turning the ball over.
Hey, I'm thinking back, man. It had to be a number of years ago now, but I was interviewing Coach Serino, you know, before he was the AD, and he was still coaching at Limestone. And when they would run their 6v6 and the guys would throw it away, the other guys went to the other end of the field and ran like four shuttle runs or like four sprints. And then they came immediately right back and went back in on offense, you know. So if they turned it over like two times out of four possessions, you know, the guys were like absolutely gassed. But that was kind of an interesting penalty or reward, you know, that he ran for that kind of stuff. I got a big kick out of it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want it to be physical punishment because I think that, you know, in the end of the day...
No. I'm just saying it was interesting, you know.
Interesting. We want them to be, hey, you know what? Just like a game, you turn it over, you got to go out. You know, you got to take care of the ball. You get the next group in there, you get some reps, and you're rolling.
Coach, I'm looking at the stats so far this year, you know, and clearing percentage looks real good. 89%ers. I know you'd like to be better, but 89% or go. The riding percentage looks pretty good. When I printed this off, it was 76% on the rides. I've never really talked to you much about riding and clearing. You know, I think of you, and I don't mean to piss you off, man, But I think of you as a run and gun kind of guy. Let me say this, an offensive guy, a transition-oriented guy. I think from the time I first met you, you've averaged over 40 shots a game. I've got it at about 42 shots a game now through the 2016 season I just ran. Are you doing something different to focus on the rides and to bring that clearing percentage from the opposition down to 76%? I mean, that's a pretty good number.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, since the rules changed a few years back, you know, we've looked at the riding thing and we've tried to get something out of it, but it's been difficult that for us, you know, compressing the field in the middle is our answer, you know, to the riding game, you know. Especially, you know, I think we got an outstanding attack, but, you know, we don't have blazers down there that can chase guys all over the field for 55 yards. But we do have some intelligent lacrosse players that know how to get in passing lanes, that know how to play two people, that can buy time for substitutions, and are smart enough to cover people opposite the box, at the top of the box, so that teams can't get that easy clear over in that area. So we try to compress the middle of the field, you know, with our attack and our middies, so that the other teams have to make some very difficult decisions, you know, in that tight space of 10 yards before the midfield line to 10 yards on the other side of the midfield line. And we try to match up, we try to pass on, we try to get the D guys in the back to show a little bit to help for a second till that middie gets to that guy. And so, you know, it makes people make difficult decisions, you know, in the middle of the field, and it's led to a few more turnovers this year. And as we go, as the season progresses, I think we're getting better at it too.
Coach, give me a quick definition of what you're thinking when you say compress the middle.
Well, I'm trying to make you, you know, clear the ball in a 20-yard area, you know, by 55. 10 yards before the midfield line, 10 yards on the other side of the midfield line. All right? And I'm trying to get my six guys in that space. All right? And then you're trying to get your, you know, seven guys that you're going to have, you know, the opportunity to clear with. And
are you dropping those attack back almost like a short zone kind of look?
The first thing the attack does on our ride is they take away the scrape middies. You know, any middie that's scraping low to try to get the ball, whether it's opposite the box or some teams
right
opposite the box and some people just in that soft spot, you know, below the middle of the box, the first thing those two attackmen do is take that away. You know, because it seems to be the big thing now everybody wants to do is to get the ball to those two scrape guys, let them run the ball over the field quickly.
Yeah.
You know, so we try to take that away, and those two attackmen have to find that guy in that middie opposite the box so that we can negate that. So
well,
now
an interesting comment, because I think a lot of coaches are trying to do that with their middies, right? I mean, as opposed to their attackmen, take away those.
The attackman's got to get the guy in the middle. It just has to happen. You know, the middie opposite the box is going to get that guy, you know, and take that guy out of the way or buy time. And if they're bringing two guys over there, you know, opposite the box, which some teams do in a ladder type of thing, you know, you got to have your
right
one attackman and one middie
right.
trying to negate that. And then we try to put the ball in the defenseman sticks and in the goalie sticks. Then we try to make them, you know, bring the ball up the field until they get into that 10 yards from midfield line, and now they got to make a pass, and they got middies coming in, and there's, you know, now there's six of our guys in that space. And then there's, you know, a lot of their guys in their space, and it gets kind of confusing. And then we want them to have to pass the ball into one of those guys over the midfield line through an attack stick. You know, so that's kind of been our thought on the clear, you know, just based on our personnel. And that seems to be the best way that we can actually really ride.
Coach, you know, are you doubling or trapping that pass in that compressed area?
We're not really trapping it. We're just trying to match up. We're
okay.
We're compressing
yeah
the three guys, you know, whatever side the ball is on, you know, those three guys at the midfield are trying to cover two-thirds of the field on the ball side and let the far third go a little bit because you can't guard everybody, you know. And then if they redirect the ball, they try to bump across the middle and try to match up, you know, with the three guys that are more on the ball side that are going to be the potential clearers. I mean, and it's not brain surgery, and, you know, sometimes you give up an easy pass, but You know, if a team doesn't have seven really good sticks clearing the ball, or seven kids that are lax IQs are real good, it gets a little hairy in there, and you know we've created some turnovers.
Man, I love it. Yeah, I've been trying to trap the ball when it goes in there. You know, put the two closest guys on any pass that goes in that. We call it kind of a short zone look or a soft look, just our terminology. But as you know, running our V trap, we're very, very aggressive in there. Problem with that is, you know, from year to year, not every team is a good trapping team. You know, some teams seem to get it, and some guys you work on it 6 minutes a day or 8 minutes three times a week, and they just, you know, that two sticks on the outside shoulder, make the guy roll into your partner, rake the stick down, all those kind of things just don't seem to resonate, you know, with some of the teams that I coach.
Well, another thought with this approach, you know, it's just our approach, obviously, but is that at the end of the day, what are you trying to at the end of the day, you're trying to win a championship. And at the end of the day, you're going to be playing the best of the best. Could we trap certain teams that we play? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, we're
great
not going to be trapping those teams at the end of the season because the talent
is
be
That's
so
a great point.
You know, so what we're trying to do throughout the year is play and get better at what we know we can do against teams of equal talent. You know, at the end, that you're going to win a championship. You can compress the field and try to match up against any team. Can you trap against any team? Absolutely. But, you know, all of a sudden those three middies are a little bit better in the middle of the field. You know, they're a lot better. And now you make yourself vulnerable with that trap, and then you put the ball in, you know, six Canadian sticks from RIT in space, and the next thing you know, they're dunking at the other end because, you know, you made yourself vulnerable because you committed two guys to, you know, one of those guys on the ride. So at the end of the day, we're usually trying to do stuff that's going to beat the team that's going to make the difference for a championship.
Well, and I think that pretty much says it all, right? I mean, that's the reason you're in the Hall of Fame, and I'm coaching high school and club lacrosse in Atlanta.
Right, yeah. Relevant. It can be all relevant to the abilities, too. You know, when other teams only got three or four kids that can handle the ball, you can get away with doing a lot more, and that's a smart thing to do. And then again, you know, our attackmen aren't the fastest cats in the world. Are they great shooters? Yes. Are they great lacrosse players? I think, and great lax.
Yeah.
But if we start running around like I see some teams chasing with their attackmen, man, you know, they throw it to one side and that kid runs, man, boom, now we're vulnerable. The ball goes in the middle and the team runs it over and we get no ride.
Well, and then at the high school level, the other thing you get is maybe there's a huge drop-off between attackmen 4 and 5. Next thing you know, those guys are gassed in the first half and you never really get them back.
Yeah.
To where they're playing at full capacity.
So that's kind of been our approach on the ride, and we've had some success with it. And you know what? It doesn't make us vulnerable at the other end. The worst case scenario is the ball gets cleared, and then we got our six guys, and you're playing 6-on-6 against us. You're not getting any advantageous situation because we exposed ourselves to the point that the ball dumped over somebody's head, and now you're going in there 5-on-4 or 6-on-5.
Well, and at the end of the day, I think that's really, you know, the primary reason to consider this kind of philosophy. I mean, you're not going to get caught in transition coming back. You know, they may clear the ball, but it's not going to be in transition.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're an idiot that traps good teams and they run right through you. You know, but we've already established the point of who's the idiot in this conversation. Hey, Coach, one more quick look at the stats. The man up over 50%. I mean, are you kidding me? I know that, oh, shoot, I meant to dig out my copy, and I did not. Jim, you remember the name of that Championship Productions video you did with all the passing, the step in, the step out, and all the stuff off the 141?
Yeah, it's the man up video.
Yeah, I mean, listeners, you got to get that. I mean, my copy is probably worn out like an old library book. Not only does it give you some great ideas for shooting drills, but it also, I mean, you know, unless we're going, 3-3, which against some teams, you know, especially at the high school level, you know, the defenses just can't adapt, you know, necessarily to 3-3 as long as you can get the shot backed up. But anyway, I just want to give my highest endorsement to that video. I think I've got all your videos now. But that particular video is awesome. And then I know from hearing you speak so many times as I have, and being at so many of your camps and clinics as I have, you're generally coming back, even though there's a ton of movement and guys are moving everywhere, you're generally most at home in kind of a 1-4 look. Is that still consistent, giving you this 50%?
Yeah, it comes back to the 1-4, but, you know, guys are stepping off the crease behind to create a...
That's what I mean, yeah.
And, you know, guys stepping off up top, you know, to give us a 1-3-2 look, so we're changing formations. But, you know, once you do something, you always have that home to come back to, so that's kind of your bread and butter, and you can play out of that formation if you're running some set pieces and, you know, you don't get anything out of them.
Coaches, most of the guys that, you know, that are on our site, even though we've got a ton of NCAA guys that listen to everything, the high school coaches are kind of the meat or the yeoman share of the audience. You know, they buy into that philosophy, and then every once in a while, you know, they play a team that just sits in that 2-3 zone and tries to slough in. You know, they're not bumping that guy on a string or doing the other things that you may find better teams do, or to change their defense up against a 1-4-1. You got a quick tip for those guys?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think...
I mean, did I ask that question so you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're talking about a team that just sits in a 2-1-2 zone and tries to get to, you know, guys staying on the corners. They try to play two people, and he's trying to pack it in and make you take an outside shot.
Yeah.
You know, so, and we're kind of playing one of those teams tonight. You know, they like to pack it in. You see the corner guys trying to play two, you know, so they can keep their shape. You know, everything we talked about in practice, you know, yesterday and in our pregame, when we showed the clips of them playing their man down, was on those corners, we can't let that one guy play two, and we got to be ready to step in the gap. If he commits to the wing guy, the guy up top can't just stand up top and be the guy that catches the ball and throws it back around. He's got to catch the ball, and he's got to attack the middle of the zone, so that now that somebody's got to slide or rotate. You know, and for high school kids that don't understand that, you know, it's very easy to stick in that 2-1-2. You know, hey, this guy runs over there and plays the ball, and then he can run 5 yards and play the other guy. Well, if you're moving the ball and guys stepping in the gap, there's no way a guy can cover a guy, you know, two guys in a 10-yard space, if the people are playing good, solid lacrosse and stepping into gaps. So,
well, I mean, you make an interesting point, because I think in high school they have a tendency to put the best shooter up at the point on the 1-4-1, when in fact he's got to be almost more of a quarterback look.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's got to be a feeder, but, I mean, even we saw yesterday in practice when our look team was, you know, holding that zone, there was definitely some great opportunities up top, you know, for people. To get some shots, and even on the wings, if we moved the ball faster and not just stayed wide, that when we made that guy commit to one guy, that next pass, that guy was thinking about attacking. He wasn't just saying, oh, yeah, I'm going to sit in my 1-4-1 or my 3-3, because if you just sit in those formations, it's easy for those, you know, guys to play two people.
Awesome, man. Hey, listen, two quick questions, and I'll get you out of here. We got so much response, and every December, you know, we publish our top 10 articles, and I want to say from podcasts, and I want to say that one was still in there. You know, last time I had you, we spent a lot of time on the pass down, pick down to initiate a 3-v-2 look, and you briefly mentioned the pass down, pick down earlier in the call, as well as the you know, ground balls to start those 3-v-2s. Is there anything else you're doing to initiate those drills? Another thing I've learned from you is, you know, multitasking. I mean, today's players are fully, even high school level players, are fully capable of focusing on two things in a drill, as opposed to the coach wanting to focus on one singular thing. And integrating a pass down, pick down, or, you know, even something as basic as a ground ball pass before they get going on a 3-v-2. Have you thrown in any new twists to start those traditional short field or crunch drills or your 3-v-2s or your 4-v-3s in addition to the pass down, pick down, and maybe a ground ball?
I think another thing that, you know, you do in those 3-on-2s and those 4-on-3s once in a while too, and, you know, again, it's just, you know, it's scripting some things. Because we're not doing a lot of 1-on-1 and the 2-on-2 stuff, because we're doing the 5-on-5, you know, sometimes we'll, in that 3-on-2, 4-on-3, we'll just say we're isolating it with a dodge. So the drill starts with one guy going after one guy really hard. And if he beats the guy, and he shoots the ball. But if he doesn't, they get a good show, then they spin the ball, and then they play 3-on-2 out of it. So, like, for example, if we were in a 3v2, you know, the guy in the point of the tandem would play the point guy, and that point guy's got to make a hard move first to try to beat that guy. You know, and if he blows by him in 3 yards and gets his hands free and he's got a shot, he shoots it. But if the guy plays great defense, he turns him, we get a good show, then the guy can spin the ball back up to the other wing guy that has to rotate up top, and then they play the 3-on-2 out of that kind of scenario. So there's a little bit of an isolation, a little bit of a one-on-one, you know, defensive mode within the 3-on-2 because it's scripted to how it has to start.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. I'm writing feverishly here. And then the guy I just want to make sure I understand, the guy who has the is playing defense on the driver.
He's starting out in the drill playing 1-on-1.
Yeah, but I mean the other defenseman is going to the first pass, or the other defender in the drill is going to the first pass, and he's immediately dropping into the hole to pick up the second pass. Is that the way it works?
Yeah, so the guy's, you know, they're in the tandem. The guy starts driving the alley. So a guy drives the alley and he's going 1-on-1. What's the guy, Jason, going to do like anything else? He's going to clear through. He's going to clear through. All right, that alley is open for that guy to go to score. You got the defender sitting there in the backup if he needs to slide to him. The one rule we do when we do that is the other guy, let's say that he drove right-handed. All right, the right-hand finisher on the far side can't sit down on the pipe. He's got to come up. On that wing, so
right.
It gives the defense a realistic chance. Because if
that's kind of what I was getting at.
If he sits down in that corner, every time you just throw the ball over to him, and you know, so
right.
So you got your left hand finisher clears through just like you would in anything when a guy dodges the alley. All right, right hand guy takes the guy down the alley, boom, he gets a step, the guy slides from the crease. Well, if the guy undercuts him and he's open, he can throw it to that guy, but if not, all right. His outlet now is the right-hand shooter who's had to move up, you know, towards the top of the box. He rolls back, throws it to that guy. The guy that was guarding the ball drops in. The guy that was on the crease now comes and plays the ball, and now you're in a 3-on-2 kind of distorted shape from the corner of the box.
Man, I love that.
Get one kid going really hard 1-on-1, you know. And you can do the same thing, you know, out of a 4-on-4.
So I was going to say, we use that... you know, as one of the variations on our 4v4, where you can't pass until you drive.
Yeah, so...
Just as a way of not, you know, you see these coaches, drives me crazy. You know, they got guys at four corners standing way outside the box, and this is how they're going to do their 1v1s, you know. And
so, I mean, that's kind of something that we'll do within that 3-on-2, 4-on-3.
Right. Very cool, man. Hey, man, last question. New drill or new twist that you've put in? I don't know how you're like me. I don't know. You know, I've written 180 articles on lacrosse drills between Lax Power and the website, you know, and people always say, how'd you get this new drill? There's just always seems to be a twist. Although I got to tell you, with a lot of the podcasts, I struggle trying to figure out what to write about, you know, because even though they're great drills and great ways to initiate drills, never with you, but with the under 130 guys we've interviewed, you know, everything I've already written about, you know. You've written 180 drills, you know, how many more variations are there? Is there anything new or a twist you put in?
Well, one of the things that we talked about in practice yesterday, and we went back to an old school drill that we hadn't used in a couple years because we had gotten away from it a little bit. You know, we're averaging like a little over 14 goals a game, which, you know, most people would be really excited about. You know, and we are excited about that, but when we look at our success rate on our traditional breaks in the game, it's been a little frustrating in our inability to finish 4-on-3 in some easy opportunities. And we've been doing some, you know, what we call our Virginia drill and our scramble, but, you know, a lot of times there isn't that guy running somebody's throat that's putting a little bit more sense of urgency. So yesterday, for a 10-minute block, we went back to our old full-field fast break drill, where we, you know, have 4-on-3 guys at the top of the box at each end, goalies with balls, lines on goal line, of the goal line, and coach blows a whistle, and a guy breaks out, and he catches the ball near the top of the box, and then he's got a guy running down his throat 8 yards behind him. So it turns that fast break, you know, drill not into somebody that can, you know, not worry about any time element. It turns it into about a 2 second or a 1.5 second decision making process because, you know, that guy's running that guy down. He's got to make that play. That point man's got to make a quick decision, you know. So we did that for 10 minutes yesterday to try to improve our traditional 4-on-3 breaks that had to have a little bit more sense of urgency and better decision making, you know, in that 1 to 2.5 seconds that, you know, the break is there.
Yeah, and I know for me personally, that's something we've focused a lot this year on, you know, because I kind of have this reputation of being a Berkman protege and a transition guy, you know, and, you know, that point guys, we've actually got them making calls, you know, as to what the slide is or, you know, maybe the trailer has come on him so fast that it's not a traditional break, but if we bang it through X, clear through, let that guy come and pop a midi out, we can get a look, you know. I think similar to what Donowski calls his express. The point guy's got to be a decision maker. Man, you are the greatest thing since sliced bread. Hey, we've talked before about laxing at the beach. I have never been there. Of course, you know, I would come for free if you needed a volunteer coach. You know, I work very, very inexpensively, mostly just for wings. But tell us a little bit about laxing at the beach and any other camps you're involved in so we can promote them, because I would encourage every coach in the world and every player in the world to get a chance to spend some time with Coach Berkman.
Well, we run Lax at the Beach through the Ocean City Recreation Department. It's always around the 4th of July weekend. It's usually in that 170 to 80 kids range. We have all our players and our coaches down there working. It's a great family camp. A lot of people come back year after year. It's a 10 o'clock to 3 o'clock a day camp. You know, kids get a two-hour session in the morning. We get a little lunch, a little two-hour session in the afternoon. Mom and Dad can go hang out at the beach for a few hours. All right, and get a little bit of break from Johnny and Joey, and yet the kids are getting involved with some really good lacrosse, making a lot of good friends and learning a lot. And then we have the Seagull Lacrosse Academy, which we've been running about 4 times a year. The next one is on June 24th, and then August 8th. They're a form of a prospect camp, but it's a practice with the gulls for an hour and a half, and immediately after that of a 2.5-hour scrimmages for kids in the high school age range that are serious about Salisbury and serious about getting better.
Jim, where's the information on that on the website? Because I don't think I've seen that.
If you go to the top of our web page, in the upper right-hand corner,
okay. It'll
say Seagull Academy.
All right.
And you click that, and then the registration form and all the information comes down. Again, the next date is the 24th, which is a Friday, so that kids that are coming for tournaments and stuff can hit that on Friday before they go to the weekend tournaments. Then we got one August 8th, which is a Sunday, and that's kind of the wrap-up of the summer recruiting session. And then we have one in October, the kind of, you know, before the blitz of the November tournaments where kids can get on campus. And then we have one usually the third Sunday in February, and those are our 4 Seagull Academy prospect type of environments.
Hey, listen, I want to let you go, but tell me about the new stadium, man. I happen to get pictures weekly from Coach Berkman
Michael,
on the progress of the stadium. It looks big time, man.
Yeah, it's very, very exciting. It, you know, for 27 years, and, you know, a lot of guys that have played against us and a lot of guys that are coaching out there that played on teams that played here know that we've played on what we would say is a very average JV high school stadium. You know, some metal bleachers, a garage with some bricks, blocks that we used to go in.
You're cold.
You know, with no heat, and we got it done. And for years, we heard the vision, you know, that we're going to get a stadium, we're going to get a stadium. You know, and we knew it was going to come someday, and we knew it was going to be a lot better than what we had. But the way this thing has turned out, it literally when I walked in it for the first time in December, and again, nothing was really finished, it brought tears to my eyes to say, holy cow, we've gone from literally the Pitts to the Ritz. It's a $20 million facility, and
wow,
that's counting the field. That's just the building. The four teams that play in the stadium have permanent year-round locker rooms. Ours has 50 oak lockers, a 100-inch flat screen area to work with the athletes. The second floor of the press box has a classroom for teaching and video work and a training room. The third floor has five boxes, suites, and the fourth floor has all the media and TV and all that other stuff. There's a really nice visiting team locker room. It seats about 3,000 on that side of the field, and then with the other side of the field that we fixed up a year ago, seats about 2,000. So it has a seating capacity of about 5,000. State-of-the-art concession stands. It's extremely impressive. It's going to be one of the nicest places to play lacrosse in at any level in the country.
I can't wait to see it, man. I can't wait to see it. Like I said, I feel like I've been there based on your progress videos. I've seen it when it was girders. I've seen it when it was buildings.
Well, we'll have pictures
fantastic.
On April 7th at 4 o'clock. The president has her official opening house, and the community in large will be there going through the facility. We'll be moving into our locker rooms on the 8th. And coming out of that locker room for the first time on Saturday the 9th against Frostburg in a key CAC conference game.
Man, I bet the players are excited.
Yeah, they're really excited. They're a little bit more than anxious because we thought, you know, in some cases originally we were going to be in that locker room and in the stadium at the end of February.
But that's
because
always the way it
delays,
comes. Yeah.
You know, especially for the seniors, they're extremely anxious because, you know, they're going to be down to their final, you know, couple games when they finally get in there. But the light is definitely at the end of the tunnel. I actually think the university gets the stadium today and is signed off, and then there's a week of, you know, furniture and the cleaning up, and then the president has her open house on the 7th.
Yeah, your Cabrini game at the end of the year, is that home or away?
That's home. That's alumni weekend, golf tournament, the whole nine yards, and our April 9th game with Frostburg is our last for leukemia game. We raised over $6,000 last year. The objective is $8,500 this year for the local leukemia society.
Fantastic, man. Hey, listen, we try and keep these podcasts timeless. You know, I'd be a little bit remiss if I didn't congratulate you on the great season and coming into the final quarter of the season, I guess, roughly, Coach. You know, just bumped up to a number one ranking. You're amazing, man, and I can't thank you enough for the podcast, and I can't thank you enough for all you've done for me personally. There would be no Lax Coach Mike at the level it is now if it weren't for Jim Berkman. And
well, Lax Mike, we're proud of what you've done for the game, all right? You're still the highlighter in my corner, all right? Still the highlighter. As a coach and somebody that, you know, loves the game and loves to give back, I really appreciate what you do for the game and promoting it. And we wish you all the best of luck. And the Seagulls would love to help your podcast in the future at any time. And we wish you all the best.
And I never, 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 you know, interestingly enough, Coach, we've had some I shouldn't say it on the air. We've had some dialogue with Championship Productions. They love our site, and we're big fans of Chan. I mean, you know, God knows how much money I've spent with those guys, me personally. Yeah, I don't know if anything will happen down the road or not. The guy that runs that company, I've had some dialogue with him, and he loves what we do, and you know, it's the number one place to go, you know, for lacrosse videos, and I think you've got four or five on there, don't you, by now?
We have four on there right now.
Yeah.
They want us to do some more stuff with them. We like working with them. They work in a real professional manner. They put out a great product. You know, and I guess I'm, unlike you, Highlighter, I'm probably not into the book part of the writing the book thing. But I like doing the videos. They're more along my line of the learning instrument.
All right, man. Hey, listen, I'm going to let you go. I know you got a game today. Thank you so much. Stay in line with me 1 second, Coach. Hey, guys, I'm on page 5 of my notes. Check back in the article section. I think we'll probably write up some of the unique twists on the 5v5. And I may do the 1v1s on the 3v2 for an article on Lax Power. Coach, thank you so, so much. This is LaxCoachMike.com. Guys, you got an unbelievable responsibility influencing the lives of these young people. Take it very, very seriously. Until next time, God bless everybody.